Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Dutilleux. Our February meeting's main topic featured Kevin McGregor speaking on the Linux LVM, or Logical Volume Manager.
Okay, I'm going to leave it up to Kevin, because Kevin has something to say. So here's presentation on LVM.
Thank you, Kat.
Oh, now he's at a loss for words.
All right, I have put together a presentation on LVM, and given the uses to which it can be put, I didn't make it an exhaustive presentation, so it will be kind of an introduction to LVM as opposed to an exhaustive look at LVM, because also I would like to get home at a reasonable time tonight. So, let's get started. What is LVM? LVM is Logical Volume Management, is what it stands for. Many operating systems support some version of this, of course. What is it? Well, there are different ways of looking at it, depending on sort of your point of view and what your background is and things like that. Basically, it's a way of abstracting the underlying physical hard drives or mass storage devices of any kind from the stuff that's stored on it. So your volumes are not tied to the physical devices as much as they had been in the past, compared to, say, using the usual partitioning methods that we have used. You could think of it as sort of a disk space or volume virtualization, if you want to put it that way, loosely. Now, why would you use something like Logical Volume Management? What are the benefits? Well, there's a number of different things that make it kind of nice. You can either remove or delay decisions about how you're going to divide up the disk space that you do have. It usually allows you to dynamically change the size of your various volumes so that if you decide, gee, maybe a 2 gig slash home was not a good idea, and this will save you a lot of time in shuffling things around and possibly a lot of outages of service and so on. And again, some of this would depend on whether or not your devices, your mass storage devices, are hot swap or not, because in a lot of cases you'd have to power down the computer to make changes like that anyway. But if you do have the option, then the LVM software does support intrinsically, like right at, in the base level, it supports doing all this online, a lot of things online. It's really, really flexible and powerful. So in a very tight nutshell, a basic way of looking at how it works. Some people like pretty pictures. Some people like, you know, sort of a run-through. I'm going to show a run-through of basically this sort of simple case. It's a fairly straightforward case of how you would start from scratch, not really using LVM, and ending up with LVM in use. So you'd install the hard drives, partition the hard drive. You usually make one big partition, although it's not required. You mark the part, that one partition, as the Linux LVM type, then create what LVM refers to as a PV, or physical volume. Then you create a volume group into which you put that one physical volume. Of course, in the real world, you would tend to have multiple physical volumes as part of your volume group, but there's a lot of cases where we'll get into do that or not. Then finally create one or more logical volumes, and this is what you would actually use at the higher level to store your data. Then you mount the logical volume somewhere, and you have LVM in use. And to make it persistent, of course, you add the stuff, the last step that you just did, the mounts information, you put it into your FS tab so that the next time you reboot, it's still there. Well, here's a picture that I found, just to give you some graphical idea. You start with the hard drives initially, one or more hard drives here. And in this case, they've done what I described briefly, is created one partition on each physical device and made a corresponding physical volume out of this LVM marked partitions. So again, it's still one-to-one here. So nothing really seems to have changed. But on the other hand, you now have a volume group, which has grouped all of these physical volumes into one allocatable space, out of which you can carve chunks of varying sizes, which you can use for your actual file systems. The benefit is that these chunks that you make logical volumes out of can be any combination of any of these volumes. So you might have one that's slightly larger than one volume and a bunch that are maybe smaller than one volume and so on. And you can mix and match, and you don't have to use up all of this volume group initially. You can under-allocate and say, well, I'm going to have like 2 terabytes of space, and the file systems I have, well, I'm only going to allocate and set them up for about 500 gig. And then at a later date, you can say, oh, it looks like this one file system is starting to get full, so I will add another 50 gig to that. And you can do that progressively to any of the file systems that you want until you run out of this volume group, the initial one that you set up. Then, of course, you have the choice at that point of either adding additional physical devices, or you can shuffle things around on these physical volumes, freeing up perhaps this one if it's an older, smaller hard drive, and you can actually replace this without changing any of this up above. So you say maybe you have like a, you know, an old, I don't know, 120 gig drive here or something, and the rest are 500 gig ones. You say, oh, well, I need a bit more space, so you move all the stuff so that it's only on these larger ones, then replace this drive, and then set it up with a new partition and make a new physical volume about it, then add it to the volume group, and all without having any outages. So there's a lot of things you can do, as you can see. There's I'll get into some of the other features a little later on, but I'll just run through this. A lot of this you've probably seen before if you've done any command line work and dealt with storage, so I'm not going to dwell on this a lot, but I just wanted to have it just for the record. This is what you really do. So power down, add the hard drive, and then, of course, FDisk. Oh, look, there's your new hard drive that you just added. It's 21.5 gig. This is a virtual machine, so I just decided to go with a 20 gig. And it says, oh, there is no partition table, so it's a brand new drive. Oh, let's not do that. And again, this is a bit small, but again, it's not really likely to be something you haven't seen before. So FDisk, SDB, and create one primary partition on it, use all the defaults, set the type to 8E, which is the Linux LVM type, write it out, and there, you've partitioned your disk. You've all probably seen that before. Then we get into the more interesting stuff, which is the first thing you would do to make a physical device available is to run the pvcreate command. So you're not really creating anything, but what you're doing is writing a little label to the disk in this partition, SDB1 in this case, that says this is now a chunk of disk that will be made available later on as part of LVM. For those who are more details-oriented, if I remember correctly, it writes out the metadata to the second sector of the partition. So I'll maybe get a little ahead of myself here. What you can do, in fact, if you... and there's reasons why you might or might not want to do this. What you can do, you see I've partitioned the disk. So SDB has one partition on it. Pretty straightforward. And then you say, oh, that's an LVM partition. What you can do is not partition the drive at all. You can use pvcreate /dev/SDB. And you can have no partition on it at all. It can be a completely zeroed out drive, and everything will still work. Of course, the downside is that you now no longer know, by looking at through, say, something like FDisk, you no longer know what's on that disk. It could be anything, because there's no partition table. You don't know what, you know, but the information is there. The metadata is distributed across all of the physical volumes, so recovery is a little more feasible than in other circumstances.
Would there be any upside to having... Would there be any upside to having that?
Well, I have used it in a virtual machine environment where it's unlikely for any drives to get mixed up or moved around. It's pretty reliably going to stay the way I set it up. And it makes it a little easier if you... Like, it's kind of multiple layers, so it's a little redundant, but it is nice, in a sense, to be able to, in VMware, to say, well, I had this 500 gig drive, virtual drive, it's now too small, so I'll add 100 gig to it. So you can, online, expand the drive. But now this, if you've created SDB1 and marked that as an LVM volume, you have to resize multiple layers of things to make it available, or you have to create an additional partition and mark that as, so you have two LVM partitions on the same drive. And I don't know, this way you can just say SDB1, or rather SDB, expand the physical or the underlying VMware drive, and then go in here and you can go PV resize, and it'll say, oh, the drive is bigger now, and it'll just expand that, and you don't have to worry about partitions and how am I going to change the extended partition or the logical partition or the, you know, partition. You just forget all the partitioning. It just doesn't matter.
I can think of one other scenario where you'd want to avoid the partition, and that's if you're planning to, or if you think you might ever move this LVM PV set to another architecture that doesn't do PC-style partition tables.
Right.
Like, say, you know, for the IBM System 360 class, or Z-class machines, rather, sorry.
If they understand them. Oh, yeah, I guess, Linux. Yeah, Linux, yeah, running Linux.
Yeah. You run Linux in a PBAR, so why
not? Yeah. So, you can see I just did a PV display. Oh, sorry.
I'm still trying to digest that last thing. So, I'm sorry if I'm getting a little off track here.
Okay.
So, if you create this as let's say, SDB, you know, not as a partition, and you move that over to a different Linux on a different architecture, then it will recognize that as a SDB.
I haven't tried it, but but yes.
That really, oh,
well, okay. If you're in a SAN environment, say, and you, let's say you were running Linux on Z series or Linux on I series or something like that, neither of which natively support PC-style partition tables. Mm-hmm. They've got their own proprietary partition table format. Because your LVM is just using raw disks, you bypass the whole partition table question altogether. So LVM on the target system, we would then just point it directly at the physical LUN, and you're done.
So do all LVMs, sort of roughly all LVMs on these different architectures, and look at the same thing when it's looking at the SDB?
Only if they're all Linux.
Yeah. The on-disk metadata is readable under every architecture Linux runs on.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are non... Like, there's AIX has its own LVM. So that would obviously have no clue. But if you're going from Linux to Linux, but the architecture has changed dramatically, so LVM should still work, because the on-disk metadata is...
the file system, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the file system would have to be supported, right. But that's usually okay, too, with Linux. So.
Yeah, okay.
So, the PV display, now there's two commands we know about. You can create, which writes out the label to the partition or the drive, and PV display will give you information about the physical volumes or one or more physical. It'll list them all if you have multiple physical volumes defined already. So in this case, I only have the one, so I have already named it as vol group. That actually comes second. So if you haven't actually, you can have a physical volume defined that's not a member of a volume group yet in which case this would be blank. And you've got the size, and it's allocatable, and the physical extent size, you can this is the size of chunks that you can allocate. That's the smallest allocatable chunk of data that you can specify. So you can increase your volumes by 4 megabytes at a time, if you want. Usually it's a multiple. You can see that in this case, 20 gig gives you, you know, it saves a bit of space. You can see it says not usable 3 meg because I think it uses about a meg for various metadata for recovery and other information. And it says allocated, currently none. And there's a UUID as well. So then you would VG create, big surprise, volume group create, name the volume, and say which one or more physical volumes are going to be members of this volume group. So very straightforward. VG display shows you a bunch of things, the name, the format. LVM2 is current. There is an LVM1, which has been superseded. And a whole bunch of other information, pretty much repeating what we already know. Total physical extents, allocatable, free, and so on. Finally, we get into something a little more interesting. Logical volume create, specify the name, and a lowercase l is number of extents. So this will be 4 gig, 1,000 times 4 meg. And the volume group that this logical volume will be a member of. So it creates the logical volume and then display it. Sure enough, it has already created a new device, /dev/volgroup/somestuff. It's a member of volgroup, read write, status is available. Here's the actual size and the current logical extent, one segment. So you can see how many different segments scattered around the various collections of physical devices there are. And some other bits of information for other uses, which are not terribly important right now. And then you make a directory for where you're going to mount it, of course, if you don't already have one. Make a file system on that new device. Notice that you don't have to partition it. It already effectively is a partition, so you just make a file system on it. And makes the file system. Pretty standard right there. And finally, you mount it. So mount that volume group slash the name that you gave it onto whatever mount point you chose, and sure enough, there it is. This uses the underlying feature of Linux called the device mapper, and that maps sort of logical block devices to the physical block devices. So kind of a strange naming system. It actually appends... It ties these two together. So if you actually have a hyphen in your volume group name, you end up with like vol dash dash group dash some stuff. It sticks in some extra hyphens. It's really kind of nice. So try to avoid hyphens when you're naming your volume groups or anything else. So you see that after it's mounted, the size is just under the 4 gig mark, 3.9, 72 meg used, and there we go. So it looks okay. Oh, shoot, we made a mistake. Well, what are we going to do about it? Look, we need actually 5 gig of space, not 3.9, so let's extend the logical volume. With a lowercase l, you specify extents, multiples of 4 meg. With an uppercase L, you can specify the space in with a whole bunch of suffixes. You can use, I think, I'm not sure if you can use K, but you can use M for megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes, and exabytes at least. So you have a lot of a lot of range there. And notice that there's a plus sign, which means I'm adding. If you forget that, it'll think that you're trying to reduce the size to 1.1 gig, which will actually fail because, well, for various reasons. But it usually gives you a message saying, oh, well, I can't make it smaller than it already is. There is a, well, extend can't really shrink. I mean, you can sort of, there is a way to shrink logical volumes. And then you just specify what you're extending, and then, of course, it says rounding up, extending logical volume, successfully resized, and then you do disk-free dash agent. Oh no, it's still 3.9 gig. What happened there? Well, obviously it's because we still have to resize the file system that we're using. So sure enough, you can do an online resize. Resize E2FS, specify /dev/mapper/that stuff. And sure enough, it says online resizing required. But it goes ahead and does it. Hopefully it's not too busy a file system. I don't know if you're aware, but the resized, I don't know how you pronounce it, resized 2FS?
Resized 2FS.
It actually does a certain amount of the manipulation of the file system sort of internally, so to speak, although with... Yeah, some stuff it just goes through the kernel and says, kernel, please do some of this for me. But some of the stuff it has to do itself until kernel version 3.3 or something. It's current. At that point, it's not pushed out to the downstream distributions yet in the most case. But if you're bleeding edge, then what happens now is the kernel will do all of it. So it's kind of like, here, resize this, and the kernel comes back and says, okay, it's done. So there's not really much to do here. So that means that certain conditions for resizing are way faster. So sometimes this comes back right away, and sometimes it can take several minutes to do a resize. But with the latest kernel that's being worked on, bleeding edge anyway. You can download it and compile it and yourself, but until a few more distributions come out, releases come out, then probably won't. But it'll still work. As you can see, now it says 5 gig, 72 meg use, 2%. So, it worked. That was pretty much the basic way of creating logical volume management on your system. And getting it going and up and running, and there you go. Now, was there? Of course, you might want to add the usual stuff. This system already had it already had LVM in use, because when I ran through the Ubuntu install, it asked me if by default if I wanted to use LVM and use the whole drive and all that sort of stuff, and I said, yeah, sure. So this is how Ubuntu specifies it, /dev/mapper/volume-group-name-name of logical volume. And it does it for swap as well. It's kind of neat that actually, I think it's kind of cool, that even the swap, you can, for example, move, if you have LVM, you can move the swap from one volume group to another online. If you think it's too big and you want to move it to like faster storage or something, just do an online move of the PV. Is it the PV or the logical volume? You can move the logical volume from one volume group to another, or different drives within the volume group. You can shuffle all sorts of these things around, but it happens at a lower level than the actual file system. So I haven't tried it, but that's what I've read. So you can basically they understood that when you're putting this into place, that you really want to be able to do all of this online with as few outages as possible. It's like enterprise grade type stuff. So it's like, well, we want to be able to shuffle these things around without downtime. So move your swap to a different volume. Sure, why not? No one will know.
But you definitely can enlarge the file system that you're running on, the operating system and all the stuff you're doing.
Yes, you can.
While the thing
you can expand the root. So if your root is too small, you
make
just add some you just add some extents and then resize E2FS and it's bigger. So
presumably you can get longer swap size.
You can do the same thing for swap. And for any of these logical volumes, like I said, one of the things you can do is move. Like I'll get into that. I think in the next slide it shows some of that stuff. There are some things that I haven't gotten into. Let me just. Some of the other things you can do, you can rename. So if you've named your you change your mind about how you want to name your logical volumes or your volume group, you can move the physical volume, you can remove it, you can resize it, you can scan it. The volume groups, you can... Where is it? There it is. VG rename, LV rename, LV resize, extend, reduce. Let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. Another thing you can do is export and import. So if you have, say, a couple of drives that you've set up, they're like data drives or something, you don't want this system to use it anymore, you can export those drives, so it kind of detaches that storage so that it's now not visible to your current system anymore. Physically remove the drives, carry them over to your other site, plug them in, and then import them. Instead of, you know, going through some other contortions, it's built in. You can export and then import the volume group, and it reads the disk, reads the labels, all the metadata is there, rebuilds it, adds it back in, and then you just mount stuff and off you go. So it's really quite interesting. Other things that you can do with LVM is it actually has, even if you're not using any MD, you know, MD ADM stuff, RAID stuff on it, you can mirror and stripe. You can't use anything that requires parity. It doesn't support any parity like RAID 4, RAID 5, RAID 6. But you can mirror drives with just LVM. So you don't have to use any of the other Linux RAID stuff. You can just use LVM for that. Or for striping. There's probably a few other things, but that's kind of the majority of what you would want to do with it.
You could do snapshots.
Yes, snapshots are another good thing. Yes, that's good. Well spotted. You can create snapshots with LVM, and they're dynamic. With, I think, LVM 2, you can now create read-write snapshots. With LVM 1, I think they were read-only snapshots. So good for backing up, if you want to say...
Kernel 2.6.32 to do read-write.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Could you combine the striping and mirroring to mock up a RAID 10 kind of thing?
I'm not sure. I wondered that myself. I don't know. No, nothing I read referred to it.
You can, because you can create LVM within a logical volume. You can partition it as an LVM physical volume, even if it is an LVM logical volume.
Okay.
I did it just to test. It's basically a metal level, right? And so you can do it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. You partition it as a physical volume, even though it's a logical volume.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Aside from mirroring, which is, of course, highly secure and redundant, but not terribly efficient, like if I'm managing data sets into the, you know, petabytes, I'm not going to want to have them mirrored. Where do you put RAID in this? At the bottom, at the top, somewhere in the middle?
Just throw up in the air and see it. No.
Well, you know, everything's a file, right? You could put it anywhere.
Yes, you kind of have your choice, but typically I would put it at the lower level. Start off with your MD devices and then put LVM on top of that.
Okay.
Don't think that's a hard and fast rule.
So I'm trying to see...
What's, because you might want to have a volume group with part of which is faster RAID 10 storage, so you, and some of it RAID 5, and be able to move things from one to the other.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, or have some stuff that's RAID 0 and other stuff. It's like, oh, maybe my slash home shouldn't be on RAID 0 storage. I'll put it on RAID 1, you know, and... Or RAID 5, you know. So you might have different classes of storage and different volume groups, and you can move stuff between. So that's one possible implementation. of using that.
Okay, so I can see why you might want to do LVM on top of hardware RAID or software RAID, either or.
Yeah.
But why would you be using LVM in a virtual environment? Because doesn't the virtual environment normally give you this flexibility anyway?
Yes, but it still does a little more transparently, in the sense that I'm just trying to think of an example here.
What if you wanted to make a copy of your virtual machine and put it on a physical machine?
Yeah, you could
do a dump of the LVM.
There's more than one way of doing that, I suppose.
Snapshots actually would be a
In my case, I was trying to reduce the number of VMware virtual disks that had to be created. Like, if someone says, if you resize it, resizing seems to be easier than... it's the whole partitioning thing, because if you're resizing the virtual volume at the VMware level, then you still have to change the partitioning.
But you...
Without, if you're not using LVM.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So if you're trying to avoid changes in partitioning...
Okay.
Like I said, if you have one virtual disk volume that doesn't have a partition on it, then resizing that, if you're using LVM internally to it, is really nice and easy. Mm-hmm. So it's not a make or break thing.
Yeah.
But, one of my coworkers said, just add another... someone says, this 5 gig volume is too small, I need another 5 gig. It's like, okay, well, just create another 5 gig virtual disk. It's like, well, then later he asked for a 7 gig, and then a 2 gig, and a 1 gig, and a 3 gig. It's like you have all littered with all these little drives, and it's annoying to me, and it offends my sense of aesthetics.
Is there a way, does LVM yet, at this point in Linux, give you a way to consolidate? Like, you could have a VG with, you could have an LV with thousands of segments.
Yes.
Which I'm assuming at some point that has to introduce a performance hit.
If you do a PT move from one volume to the other,
pretty consistent. But there's also there's also commands in here for VG split and VG merge. So you can split off some portions of that into a different volume group, and you can merge stuff back, and you can use the LV move, and is it? You can use LV move to move things around. So if you're really concerned about that, but I think the overhead is fairly constant. I don't think
actually the
fragmentation is really a problem.
I think the more realistic concern would be that pretty sure, maybe I'm wrong, I think LVM only supported 255 extents. It only extended the volume 255 times.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you have to extend the 256th time?
Well, if you planned ahead, I think you can specify the size of the extents. So you can make the extent 16 meg. So on and so forth. But yeah, if you're doing a whole bunch of small extensions, then
that's what I mean. Like, how do you coalesce that into one brand new LV?
Well, you'd have to have some additional storage on which you'd create something with a bigger extent size. So you'd have fewer extents.
Just add another PV to the array, to the VG, and to do a PV move.
That's all it would take.
All it would take.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Except that within a PV, I think you can only have one extent size, so you can't make your extent size larger within one volume group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you add a disk, you can't get to what you're saying, make a larger extent size.
Right. Well, unless you add additional storage and make a new PV.
It's not so much dependent on the extent size. I mean, that does have a factor, but just the number of times you can extend a volume is limited to a fairly low number.
Once you moved it to something new, then you've only got one extent because it's fresh move. So now you've got another 255 left to go.
All right.
Mike?
Yes, I'm just sort of thinking about a situation where, let's say, LVM would be used, let's say, in place of, say, RAID 0.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from these what else can you do commands, would there be, for example, better reliability, let's say, if you get one hard drive crashing? In other words, would you still be able to recover some of your files from the other hard drives?
Well, not if it's RAID 0.
Correct, not if it's RAID 0, but I mean, if you're running LVM instead of RAID 0.
Well, LVM and RAID are not...
Yeah.
They're orthogonal.
Yeah.
So if you're using LVM, the mirroring part of LVM?
Well, I'm just sort of thinking...
Because LVM by itself, it offers no redundancy.
No, because I'm just
by
sort of...
By default.
Because I'm just sort of thinking that two hard drives, if you RAID them together, like that creates basically one file system. And if you do an LVM like you showed as well, that would also create one file system.
Right.
But if one of the hard drives died in that that one file system in RAID 0, of course, wouldn't be able to recover it, but would you be able to recover what's on the other hard drive?
Likely not.
Likely not, okay.
Well, likely with any recovery, at some point you just give up and you send it to OnTrack and they extract magic off it.
They blow some magic dust back into it. Magic smoke, or you can put it back in.
Yeah, you just, you know, send your credit card along with it.
Yeah.
As your firstborn son.
Yeah, throw money at the problem and it goes away.
Yeah.
But you're saying no RAID. No RAID? Or are you saying two disks with RAID 0?
Oh, two disks with RAID 0.
He's comparing a two-disk RAID 0 system to a two-disk
LVM
system. But if you've got two physical disks and you've joined them in LVM, then your data can be spread across both disks in any order. So if you lose one of those, you're still screwed.
Yeah. But if you're using LVM mirroring...
Oh, yes. But he's not talking about
you
that.
You can force... But you have to be aware of that, too.
You have to set that up initially.
You have to force your logical volumes onto separate disks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you specify when you're setting up LVM, say... these.
I guess otherwise it's kind of pointless.
These two physical volumes are mirrored. Actually, you can have more than one mirror, too. It's not just two-disk mirror. You can have, three copies of the same stuff.
Right, just to be paranoid, yes.
So that used to be the default.
Some people do that.
Okay.
What does the data look like on the disk? When there's so many levels like this, is there a file system written onto the disk that you couldn't have to look at? I mean, your data may be missing because it's broken in bits between a bunch of disks.
Well, the file system, like your EXT4 file system, is there on the disk, but it's broken up into extents. So depending on how you allocated the extents, whether you allocated them all at once, then they'd be in a certain order. They'd be contiguous and in order. Whereas if you extended your logical volume multiple times and other things happened in between, then it could be all over and it would be really hard to recover. But the actual information about the logical volumes and the volume groups and the physical volumes is actually duplicated on each physical volume. So you can throw all your disks back into a system in any order, and LVM, when it comes up, will read each of those disks and it'll know about each of the disks, and it has all the UUIDs for all the logical volumes, the physical volumes, and the volume groups, and it puts all this together and reads all the disks and says, okay, this is one set, I've got everything, yay. Or it'll tell you if it's missing something. Mm. If one disk is missing, then it knows. Like, you may throw in 10 disks that were all put together with LVM, or you may put in 9 disks and one's missing, and it'll know which of the physical volumes, volume groups, and logical volumes. It'll know which of them are still viable, whether they're complete or not.
Right.
Because depending on how you've laid it out, some of it may still be usable, even though you've got one disk missing.
And on a single disk from a set like that, could you read data that fit in one extent? Like a file smaller than the extent size is? But or do you require the whole thing for you to make any sense of where the files are located?
Well, I mean, even if it's a small file, if it's more than one sector, it could still be distributed across two physical extents. So you never know.
I don't think you can DD off of a physical volume.
No, not really. I mean, you can, but trying to make sense of it would be a nightmare. I wouldn't try it, that's for sure. So, the information is all there, but... Any other questions? Anyone? Anyone? Okay.
Great. Thank you, Kevin.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.